You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Struggling to remember which day of the week it is, but it's Thursday. I know that. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't remember that, but it's kind of confusing. So, good Thursday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it. The first show of 2020. I got to make a new folder for 2020 and all the audio files. I just had to write myself a note. How about that? So, getting ready to close out in what? 5 months? Getting ready to close out the fourth year of All Marine Radio. Yeah, into the fifth year. And right away, post-traumatic winning gets going here. So, head to tomorrow to Marine Corps Air Station Miramar, about an hour, 20 minutes, hour and a half away from me to the south to do it. Go down there to do audio checks today. And then on Saturday, fly to Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point, a little bit north of Camp Lejeune, and then work for the 2nd Marine Air Wing for a few days. Come home, and then down to Camp Pendleton on Monday and Tuesday to do post-traumatic winning for Marine Wing Support Squadron 372. Yeah, one of my favorites. And it's been interesting as the year has gone by, the way, you know, I've been able to watch. First of all, Happy New Year to everybody. I hope everybody had a great New Year. I did. I didn't do anything, but the past week has been an awesome week for my family as we've all been together for a few days, to include daughters-in-laws, fiancés, grandsons, and everybody. So it's been, all parents will tell you, when your children leave the roost, you don't get that many opportunities to get everybody in one spot at one time. And so, our kids all made the effort, to get back here. And so, I think that is the ultimate, as they get older, that's the best Christmas you can have is when you can get your family all together in one spot. It is, it's a great, 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 great time. So anyway, we had a wonderful time. over the last few days, and everybody started to head home last night and will continue. So, but anyway, I'll get a chance to see my son and my daughter-in-law and my grandson back in North Carolina, because my son's stationed, part of the 2nd Marine Division now. But anyway, post-traumatic wounding's changed throughout the course of the year. And one of the things that, you know, is there needs to be a class about counseling. Most of us learn about counseling as officers at the basic school as second lieutenants, and I don't know that anybody has another educational model or module that they put in a formal school about, hey, this is how you do this. And so how do you get better at it? What do you do? And I don't know that we pay enough attention to that. And again, counseling is weapons maintenance. Counseling is weapons maintenance on, you know, the most important asset that you have as an organization, and that is your people. And so pretty important. And so as you think about that, especially in the light of when Marines take their own lives, the when you think about that, you say, okay, so, you know, you have these classes, and so what sustains that discussion? What gets your hands on them? What makes a difference in their lives? And as we all know, it's coaching and mentoring. And that has been, you know, that's been, you know, part of life forever. And so, anyhow, my lens has changed relative to that. How does that work? What do organizations do, not just the Marine Corps, but all branches of the service do, relative to sustaining through counseling the things that you try to install? And so if you're not teaching people how to mentor better, how do you do this thing? How do you get your hands on them? And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people that don't have a clue as a leader. There's some people that are gifted, but I would say the vast majority of Marines, you know, they don't do a whole lot of it before they come in the Marine Corps, and then they begin to do it. So to me, that's one part of it. And then the second part of it is, you know, the holidays pose their own special challenges. And I think that if you don't have a specific effort, probably starting in the second half of November, to lean into, you know, talking, right, to this stuff, then I think that bad things happen. And my thoughts about the implementation of post-traumatic wing have matured over the last year. And so you see this stuff and you say, you know, we could do better here. We could do better there. We could do that better, right? All in an effort to make sure that, you know, you knock down the walls of isolation. You make sure that people know that, hey man, you're just struggling with the stuff that we're all struggling with. You can do it, right? Just that positive, steadying hand on your shoulder, you know, and the relationship. And so, anyway, so my thoughts have matured, I think a bit more about how to do that. And so, anyway, today, the Lynch Kenny thing's going to happen, and we'll talk about what's going on in Baghdad, right? We'll talk about what's going on in the region. And this, again, Iran is under incredible pressure to change the narrative, right? They have demonstrations in the streets. If you look at some of the writing, some of the things that are coming out of Iran, right? They've killed a lot of people in those protests. And so whenever that happens, you know, almost predictably, you know, they look to change the narrative. And how do you change the narrative? Well, you change the narrative by getting the great Satan involved and reminding everybody, this is what we're saving you from. We're saving you from, you know, the United States and the evil that comes with the United States. And so, you know, we'll drum that up again and remind everybody. And so they tried to do that with the Saudi attack on the Saudi oil production. Well, that will surely, right, that will surely provoke an American response. And it didn't. And so, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to get Europe to come to their rescue. And Europe has not budged relative to sanctions and other relief that they're looking for. So, one of the things that we've talked about on this program, and Jeff Kenney as an advisor, you know, has expressed a concern he'll do it again today when he comes on in about 55 minutes or so, 54 minutes or so, about, you know, small groups of advisors that are training, right, and advising, and they're spread out across Iraq. They're a bit vulnerable, right? And then you have these militias, Shiite militias, that fought, you know, with the Iraqi army, that fought with our forces, again, in the fight against ISIS. Well, now that threat has subsided. So now what? Okay. And so, again, I don't believe anybody believes it's anything other than on orders from Tehran, specifically the IRGC, the Iranian guards, right? The Republican guards in Iran. They attack with rockets a place where they knew there were Americans. So, you know, if we can't get the reaction we need from the oil refinery, let's go after Americans, because we need an American response, right? The whole rest of our theater is based on an American response. So so they got one, and now you're seeing the choreography of their plan. And again, in my opinion, there's no doubt. In military planning, you do this thing called, and when I say planning, I mean, there's people that specific, right, their job is you're a planner, okay? That's what you do. You plan shit. And so when you sit in there and do it, and you kind of war game courses of action, you do this thing called action, reaction, counteraction, okay? So here's the action, right? The action is, the Iranians shoot. Okay? And then, from the Iranians, their planners, the reaction is, what will the Americans do? Well, what they showed us is if with no American loss of life, as in the Saudi Arabian, you know, oil refinery stuff, there will be no response. We need a response, so we have to kill Americans. We have to kill or wound Americans. Okay, well, that means we're going to have to do this. Okay. So their reaction will be what? Well, we're not exactly sure, but they will certainly use their drones and aviation arm to go ahead and destroy something. All right. So they'll kill us. Yes. Okay. And then our counteraction is what? Well, we'll have our militias get after their embassy. Now, here's the problem with the whole embassy. Is the United States willing, on TV, live, to mow down people as they come over the wall, if it got to that? And if you're Iran, either one of two things are going to happen. Either you're going to overrun the embassy and take Americans captured, like they did years ago, or you're going to have videotape of bodies everywhere killed by United States at the embassy. 100 more Marines were sent in 2 days ago by American Marines and security forces there. let alone if there's aviation assets involved in it, blah, 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 blah. So, which do you want? Which looks better? The righteous indignation of a protest, protesting the death of innocent Shiite militiamen who were murdered by the great Satan. And so, that's kind of the choreography that's at play here. So when Jeff and Tim come on, we'll talk about that. The broader implications for the region, what's next. Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, he was on the news this morning, and you'll hear the audio from that here in a little bit, him talking about the deployment, him talking about why, him talking about the aim of the deployment, and also 750 members of the 82nd Airborne headed to the region as well. So, and again, you'll hear what he has to say about that. So, a very good Thursday morning, I have to think about it, a very good Thursday morning to you. Again, I hope you have had a nice new year and that you have your resolutions all intact. If you don't have a resolution, I'll give you one. Change somebody's life. Use post-traumatic winning and change somebody's life. Make that your resolution. And you'll have a great new year. I don't know if I shared with you an email I got. So the last time I was with you, yep, I already shared it with you. All right. United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to your New Year's resolution, okay? And if you don't have one, this is dedicated to the one I just gave you. So, in either case, this is dedicated to you that you change somebody's life in the year 2020. Yeah, how crazy does that sound?
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Currently, where's my timesheet? Hold on, man, I had it here. Okay, here it is. Yeah, currently in Quantico. We know what time it is in Quantico, right? It's 11:22. It is sunny and 41. At Camp Lejeune, where I'm headed here in a couple days, is sunny and 57. Marine Corps Base 29 Palms, it is sunny and 49. Camp Pendleton reports clouds and 49. Further west, at Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and 69 degrees. In Okinawa, it's cooled off substantially. Clear, dark, and 57 degrees in Okinawa, still further west. Okinawa, where it's 1:23 a.m. Afghanistan, where it's 8:53. Yeah, 8:53. They're like a half-hour time change, too. In addition to the hours, they throw in an extra half-hour, just so everything can be precise. Whose stupid idea was that, man? That means the time zone is so big that we're going to adjust for the half hour? Interesting. I'd be curious to understand behind that. It's like, why did Prohibition happen? Anyway, in Lashkar Gah, the provincial capital of the south central part of the country, the Helmand province, it is dark, cloudy, and 49. And further to the southwest, in Ramadi, which is about, 45 minutes west of Baghdad. Yeah, it is dark, cloudy, and 56 at the home of All Marine Radio, Fair and 51. Shithole weather today. That can stop. Weather in Saskatchewan this morning. Churchbridge is overcast and northwest winds. 7 miles an hour, making 23 degrees above zero feel like 16. This afternoon, a mix of clouds and sun. Winds out of the west at 9. High of 23 feels like 16. Post-traumatic winning, growth mindset. And there's a cartoon. A little girl with a cat sitting on the hill of a grassy meadow. What will the new year bring us, she says. The cat, I think it's a cat, says 365 opportunities. Hell, it's more than that. All right, it's more than that. From Nancy, at 10:40 a.m. in Pleasantville, Pennsylvania, sunny and 38, on the way to 46 degrees. Light winds out of the south-southwest at 9. Snow still sticking, but we'll see if it stays. Yeah, I'm thinking at 46 degrees, only in the shade. Nothing different about Erie and a picture of Pleasantville, the rolling hills of Pennsylvania. Now, I don't know if, yeah. Don't you love these things? Like, thanks for signing up. I didn't sign up for anything, especially around the new year. All right, we'll take a break, and then when we come back, you'll hear Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense. I think let me see if this thing is going to work. Oh no, please. Okay, it's going to work. So you're going to hear a little bit of reporting on Fox and an interview he did with them about an hour ago, a little bit more than an hour ago. So you'll hear the Secretary of Defense talking about what we're doing in Iraq relative to what everybody believes is an Iranian provocation inside the country of Iraq. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and hope in me. Of this heartbreak, I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I dream, yeah.
Earlier today, on the Secretary of Defense made an appearance on Fox. Let me see if I can get this thing to play.
Looking at video screen left, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Members of the 82nd Airborne, their rapid reaction force, headed out there to the Middle East. And the picture screen right is the aftermath of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad after those Iranian-backed militias attacked.
All right, time for our headliner this morning. He's with us now, Defense Secretary Mark Esper. Mr. Secretary, good morning to you. Welcome. Thank you for being here this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
How would you describe the current level of tensions and the threat in...
Kind of interesting. You don't see the Secretary of Defense do single network interviews very often, save the Sunday news shows, right? It's not very often that you see them do that. So this is kind of interesting. I don't know if the president isn't prodding people to take a page out of his playbook and say, hey, look, you've got to get out there and you've got to sell this stuff. When we do stuff, you've got to get out there and you've got to tell the story to the American people about why we're doing this. So that's kind of interesting.
Middle East as we speak.
Well, look, they're obviously high. We've had Iran-sponsored militia groups attacking U.S. forces now for several months. It culminated in the death of an American last week and the wounding of several soldiers. And this obviously crossed a line for us, and we responded with attacks, strikes on multiple sites by Khatib Hezbollah, which is an Iran-sponsored terrorist group. And I think we responded at the direction of the president quite forcefully, and it was a very bold and decisive move, and asserted our right of self-defense and the fact that we will act in order to defend our personnel and our interests in the region.
Could you provide some clarity on the troop deployment that has been announced so far, 750 going over, thousands more prepared to go? What does the timeline look like, and what is the possibility that more are sent?
Well, again, a priority for us is always the safety and security of our people, whether it's our diplomats, American citizens, or our forces in the region. As we've seen the events of the past couple of days, we feel very, very sure that our embassy is well secured and it has sufficient capability there to deter anything that happens. But just the same, it's prudent, based on lessons learned over the past, that we deploy additional forces to either reinforce that site or other sites in Iraq, or frankly any other location in the Middle East, as this thing escalates, if it does indeed escalate.
You know, Mr. Secretary, you put the words Iran and embassy together. We think about the siege in Tehran and the lessons learned from there, that you had protesters who made it into the compound and then took over. What are the rules of engagement for our soldiers now at the embassy? Anybody comes over the wall gets shot. Anybody who tries to break in a window in the interior gets shot. How much leeway do they have, and what are the red lines for the use of force?
Well, clearly, we have always have the right of self-defense, and we have more than sufficient capability on the ground at the embassy and poised nearby to respond to anything. But it's important to back up and understand a few things. First of all, the embassy is situated in a compound that is over 100 acres large. The embassy itself was built in the wake of 9/11 and other things, so it's a very strong, capable facility that would be very, very hard to breach. And it would be a bad day for anybody that tried to do that. All that's happened so far is that these militia groups who were directed by Iran to go out and do this this demonstration, if you will, this show, is they got access to the outer compound that was supposed to be defended by Iraqi security forces. As we know at this time, that they have retreated. But we are prepared just the same for anything else that could happen.
You make an interesting point. It was supposed to be defended by Iraqi security forces. You also make the point that the embassy is in the green zone. The only way for these militias to get there was through multiple checkpoints, the most secure part of Baghdad, et cetera, and come over a bridge. Are you worried that if this was not coordinated, aided, and embedded by the Iraqi government, that there are elements of the Iraqi government so aligned with Iran that it's a wink and a nod for this kind of behavior?
Well, the Iranian government is clearly trying to work its influence all throughout Iraq, and in Baghdad in particular. I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen thousands of normal, average Iraqis over the past several months protesting either corruption or in their government or the malign influence of Tehran in their government. So it's something that we watch carefully. We, of course, support a strong, prosperous, and independent Iraq. We respect Iraq's sovereignty. But at the same time, we're going to defend ourselves and our interests and our people in Baghdad.
The president tweeted out that they will pay a big price. He said this is not a warning. This is a threat and a New Year's message. Mr. Secretary, what is President Trump's willingness to further engage there?
Look, the president has been very engaged. The national security team has been on the phone with him or has met with him daily, if not every few hours. He wants to make sure that our forces are well taken care of, that we're capable of accomplishing our mission on the ground. And he's absolutely correct that if anybody challenges us, they will be met with a severe response, a strong response by U.S. forces.
What does that severe, strong response look like?
Oh, I'm not going to telegraph what we're going to do, but people know that we have vast capability to do any number of things. We will act in response to actions by Iran or its proxies, and we will act to preempt any attacks on our forces, our personnel, by Iran or its proxies.
Are President Trump's views on how to proceed in line with that of his security team?
Absolutely. We all agree on the importance of asserting our right of self-defense, of protecting our forces, of defending our interests in the region. Again, you've got to keep in mind that we are there in Iraq working with our Iraqi partners to ensure the enduring defeat of ISIS. That's something we work closely on them. Through the president's direction, we were able to physically defeat the caliphate. It remains physically defeated, if you will. And now our aim is to deter further Iranian bad behavior that has been going on now for over 40 years. It's time that Iran has started acting like a normal country.
It's a long list of bad behavior, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, you and I both spent a lot of time in the Middle East, sir. You back during your time, even as a lieutenant colonel during the Gulf War. It's a little bit like the sandbox from grade school, and sometimes bullies don't understand sanctions. They don't understand tough talk, deployments, airstrikes against proxies. Bullies understand a punch in the nose. Is there a time that the Iranian bullies and the Ayatollahs need a punch in the nose to their leadership that goes beyond merely sanctions and rhetoric?
Well, again, I'm not going to speculate with regard to next steps. I would just reiterate that we retain the right of self-defense of our forces, our interests, our partners in the region. We said that very clearly going since my time in office now. And at the time where the Iranian-sponsored attacks on the Saudi oil facilities as well, We need to stand up to Iran, and we need them to behave like a normal country. That means ending their nuclear program, ending their long-range ballistic missile program, the stopping of hostage-taking, and, of course, their malign behavior, where they are inspiring terrorist groups, resourcing and directing them all the way from Africa, across the Middle East, and into Afghanistan.
I get the demand, sir, but it appears as though the Iranian regime is not really listening. Hostage-taking, they still have Robert Levinson. As you noted, they attacked the Saudi oil facilities, and there was not a military response. They shot down the U.S. drone. There was not a military response. So far, there's only been a military response against their militias in Iraq. Is the idea here that only the loss of U.S. life will result in a U.S. military response?
Well, what needs to happen is the international community needs to come together once and for all and condemn Iran's bad behavior, to help us with the maximum pressure campaign, and to tell Iraq, I'm sorry, to tell Iran that it's time to sit down, behave like a normal country, and come up with a plan with regard to their various aspirations that addresses everybody's concerns. But it will take the international community to do that, and that's what we call on them all to do. In the meantime, again, we will continue to defend our interests. We will continue to support our friends and allies, and defend principles such as the right of commerce and navigation in the Strait of Hormuz.
Going to that point of the international community, what right now is the coordinated response with the international community to respond?
Well, we've had a lot of good statements from our friends and partners both in the region and in Europe and elsewhere, condemning the attacks on the embassy. We've had private shows of support as well with regard to our actions. So again, I think it's time for the international community to come together and to stand up to Iran and tell them that they need to stop this once and for all.
Obviously, there's a lot of options on the table that could further escalate the situation there or not. President Trump is vowing to respond. He could respond forcefully. He could respond and do nothing. He could also shock everyone and withdraw troops altogether from Iraq. Is he considering all of those options?
Well, again, I'm not going to talk about what the president is or is not considering, but he is committed to defending our interests, our personnel, our friends in the region, and of course standing up to Iran and deterring Iranian bad behavior. And so we will either respond or take preemptive action as necessary to make sure that we defend those interests.
You made an interesting point about it.
Interesting, right? I mean, you rarely hear a Secretary of Defense take this many questions from single source media, right? Interesting.
It's time for Iran to act like a normal country. They haven't, basically, for four decades. There were two times they really backed down. One was Operation Praying Mantis, where Reagan sank about a third of their navy. The other time was something that you know about well, which is right after the second Gulf War, when they suspended their nuclear program after George W. Bush invaded Iraq. Those two times are times of sort of disproportional U.S. military response to an adversary, and the Iranians back down. Are you worried that the only way they will back down this time and act like a normal country is with an overwhelming U.S. military action?
Well, it's up to them to decide. We've told them what they need to do on multiple occasions, and we're prepared, again, to defend ourselves and defend our interests, and we've shown a willingness to exercise and use the military to do so, and we remain prepared to do so in the region.
As we discuss escalating tensions in the Middle East, what is next for North Korea? How does the president and his defense team plan to respond to the situation there?
Well, we think the best path forward with regard to North Korea is a political agreement that denuclearizes the peninsula. We are on that path. We want to remain on that path. And we would obviously urge Kim Jong-un and his leadership team to sit back down at the negotiation table to do that. But that said, if we remain, from a military perspective, ready to fight tonight as need be, but more importantly, or as importantly, I should say, enable our diplomats to get an agreement done. So we would urge restraint by Kim Jong-un. At the same time, we work closely with our partners in South Korea to ensure the readiness of our forces on the Korean Peninsula.
You know, nuclear blackmail is a game plan that the Kim family knows pretty well. We don't need to tell you that. But to the issue of U.S. military...
Now, we'll tolerate this discussion about North Korea, although it is topical, but they come back to Iraq here in a minute.
Terry Deterrence, John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, North Korean hawk, he tweeted yesterday that there needs to be congressional hearings on whether or not our forces are indeed ready to fight tonight. Can you give us anything beyond the assurance? Is there some hard facts that the Kim regime needs to understand in terms of what ready to fight tonight means?
Look, we have a full array of forces. They are ready. They are air and naval, marine, army forces. We have our South Korean partners with us, and then we have a broader set of allies and partners out there as well. So I'm confident in the readiness of our forces to deter North Korean bad behavior, and should that fail, to fight and win as necessary.
Secretary Esper, before we let you go, I know you have a very busy morning here. If you could just lay out a timeline of what is next in the Middle East as far as U.S. response and coordinated response, international response, what we can look forward to in the hours and days to come here.
Well, my crystal ball doesn't work that well, but I would say that we will continue to reinforce our presence from a military perspective in the region, to protect our personnel, to whether they are the diplomats or American citizens or military personnel. We will ensure the readiness of our forces, again, throughout the region to either respond or preempt any type of attacks on U.S. forces. At the same time, I know Secretary Pompeo is working aggressively to talk to our allies and partners, whether they are in the immediate region or beyond, to build political support for what we're doing. And again, I would call on the international community to say, you know, it's time, finally, for Iran to start behaving like a normal country.
Right, and we know that Secretary Pompeo postponed his planned trip to Ukraine because of all of this. The 750 troops that have been deployed, what will their mission be? Where are they going first?
Well, they're deploying to the region. I won't give specific locations, but their immediate mission will be prepared to reinforce our sites in Iraq first, but then more broadly as need be, to make sure, again, we have sufficient force protection on the ground.
All right. Secretary Mark Esper, we appreciate you coming on America's Newsroom this morning. Thank
you. There you have it. So we'll talk about that here when Tim and Jeff come on. We'll kind of broaden the lens a little bit and talk about this in the context of the attack on the oil refinery, what's going on in Lebanon, what's going on in Iraq, what's going on inside of Iran, the pressure of the IRGC and the Republic, the leadership of Iran is under these days. And so we'll talk about all of that here in a matter of about 17 minutes. So don't touch that dial. The Jeff and Tim will be here. So the so don't go anywhere. No, it's always interesting. Jeff's experience in a couple of different ways. Among us, he's the only one that guarded an embassy, and in Tehran, no less. And then also his experiences as an advisor. Tim has some experience doing security in Baghdad as well, so that'll be an interesting little segment. So yeah, that's why you listen. So don't touch that dial. A few headlines as we head towards the top of the hour from Stars and Stripes. After an extended around-the-world deployment, the USS Abraham Lincoln turns towards home. When the aircraft carrier Lincoln left Norfolk, Virginia on April 1, its crew knew it was in for a deployment that was outside of the norm. The ship had been operating in and around the Middle East since May, left the region in mid-December, and is bound for home. When the carrier left Norfolk on April 1st, the crew knew it was in for deployment. As I said, it was outside the bun. But it was also switching home ports from the East Coast to the West Coast. Originally due in San Diego around Halloween, many Lincoln family members moved across the country over the summer without help of their sailors in order for children to start school in time for the new school year. World events and maintenance issues of another carrier led to the ships being extended. The E word, let me tell you, if there's a word that you do not want to hear during a deployment, it's the E word, right? So anyway, they've been extended. They were supposed to be home by Halloween, so they're 60 days extended, and they're probably another 3 weeks from getting home. So anyway, so keep them and your families in your prayers. The I don't even really want to talk about. I don't really want to talk about Eddie Gallagher. The yeah, he's in the news, cashing in on his notoriety. Congratulations to him. The Navy's Atlantic-based Second Fleet Command now is operational. Now, if you remember, the Second Fleet of the United States Navy was stood down as part of the Cold War dividend, you know, when Russia's efforts were greatly, you know, reduced. The Second Fleet is now responsible for overseeing ships, aircraft, and landing forces on the East Coast and the North Atlantic, reaching up into the Arctic, right? Reaching up into the Arctic. The anyway, so they're fully active. That it had been contemplated, and then they were activated on paper, and now they've got all the ships and the infrastructure, so they are working up into the Arctic. Next headline from Stars and Stripes. Marine law enforcement can carry privately owned firearms on base. Marine Corps law enforcement officers may now carry privately owned concealed weapons on Marine bases, a change made in the aftermath of tragic shootings on two military bases last month. Civilians and Marines credentialed under the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act may carry their own firearms for personal protection but cannot use them while on duty, a service memo issued on Tuesday said. So if once you draw your weapon, your service weapon, your personal weapon goes away. That's what that means. Interesting. This is going to be, I mean, the instructors in Pensacola were demanding the right to carry sidearm. All right? Demanded the right to carry sidearm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Now, why wouldn't they be allowed to carry sidearm? Right? Come in the morning, go to the armory, grab your pistol, go about your day. At the end of the day, turn your weapon in. Well, why wouldn't that be allowed? Good question, Mac. Why wouldn't that be allowed if there was a threat? Well, there's obviously a threat. People are dead because of it. Now we're going to act like it didn't exist? U.S. Naval Institute News has a lot of great reports. I can't read them enough, right? Here's one. Report to Congress on U.S.-China competition in the South and East China Seas. The following is a December 20th, 2019 Congressional Research Service report. U.S.-China strategic competition in the South and East China Seas. It's a background paper for Congress. And then there's a series of stories about the top stories in 2019, both Navy and Marine Corps. The there's a pretty cool video, if you haven't seen it, that was circulating. There's pretty cool video of Marines loading ammunition and getting ready to go to Baghdad. If you have time, just do a quick search. You can find it on Twitter. Just do search Marines Baghdad, and it'll pop up. And so anyway, the 100 Marines that had been in Kuwait were ospreyed into the embassy compound. And there was video of that, which is pretty cool. And, yeah, you see them flying in, you see them getting off, you see them, you know, the Ospreys landing and whatnot. In a statement from the DOD, approximately 750 soldiers will deploy to the region immediately, and additional forces from the IRF are prepared to deploy over the next several days. A Pentagon statement says this deployment is an appropriate and precautionary action taken in response to the increased threat levels against U.S. personnel and facilities, such as we witnessed in Baghdad earlier. Now, again, the DOD's been warning of this for a while. Okay? The DOD's been warning about this for a while. So, anyway, that's from U.S. That's from U.S. NI News. The from Marine Corps Times. You know, we asked a question about what does gender integration mean relative to the National Defense Authorization Act, right? Did it mean the OCS model? All right. Here's an article. Platoon-level gender integration now required at Marine Corps boot camp as lawmakers still question recruit safety. Gender integration is now coming to both Marine Corps Recruit Depot Parris Island, South Carolina, and the Recruit Depot in San Diego. And though the Corps will still be allowed to have separate gender squad bays where recruits sleep and shower, with the passage of the 2020 National Defense Authorization Act, the rest of the training must be fully integrated down to the platoon level, according to lawmakers. Major Joshua Benson, Marine Corps spokesman, told Marine Corps Times in an email on December 20th that once the law is signed, we will immediately begin preparing to meet the requirements laid out in the NDAA. Parris Island, South Carolina will have 5 years to comply with the new law, while the depot in San Diego, which has not trained female Marines, will have 8 years before it is required to take female Marines. The Marine Corps said it could not provide any more details on how it plans to comply. The Marine Corps is the only service in the U.S. military that does not have co-ed boot camp. In 2019, however, Parris Island, which is home of the 4th Recruit Training Battalion, the only recruit battalion dedicated to training female Marines, saw at least three gender-integrated companies. But that's not what we're talking about here. That's the OCS model. Okay. These companies were comprised of five all-male platoons and one all-female platoon. Since most of the recruit training is done at the platoon level, these recruits would still spend most of their time at training segregated by gender. But for morning physical training, obstacle course attempts, the entire company classroom study, men and women would be training side by side. Here's a quote from a congressional staffer. That's not actually gender integration, a member of Congressman, I think her name is Jackie Spears' staff, told Marine Corps Times, adding that the new law will require the Marine Corps to go even further when it comes to gender integration. Though the law does not require the Marine Corps to integrate squad bays, the lawmakers did ask why the use of squad bays posed a barrier to gender integration. What activities occur in squad bays? Please be as inclusive as possible, they asked. So, gender integration at the platoon level. Interesting little article. So, Marine Corps got, Parris Island's got 5 years. San Diego's got 8 years to fully integrate women at the... Well, you know, let me just tell you. The reality is this, okay? And you can talk to anybody. But physically, what's going to happen is they're going to be at the end. And they will suffer the slings and arrows for that. And everybody will see it, right? They will not have any time to get up the snuff. Right? They will not have, and again, the argument among people that, you know, especially parents, is that, is my daughter going to be thrown in with everybody? no, look, she'll have time, blah, blah, blah. That's been one of the major, and the Marine Corps believes it's doing it right. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works and the effect of that and how the Marine Corps navigates it. So again, that was a question about the National Defense Authorization Act. And I guess it's been answered now. Email, Mac, any new activity in the last 12 hours relative to the embassy in Iraq? Answer, no. No. The Shiite-sponsored event that was choreographed to go on, has been toned down. Now, we'll see if it gets brewed back up. One more Marine Corps story, and then we'll talk about top five stories in Early Bird. I'll just read you the headlines, and then we'll take a break and get Tim and Jeff on. But the 28th Commandant of the Marine Corps, who led the Marine Corps when I came into it, General P.X. Kelly, died at the age of 91 here earlier this week. Born on November 11th in 1928. Native of, grew up in Boston, joined the Marine Corps in 1950 after graduating from Villanova College. Served as an infantry officer as part of 2nd Force Reconnaissance Company, later deploying with 2nd Battalion 4th Marines to Vietnam in 1964. During that tour, he was awarded the Silver Star. He was the CO of the 1st Marine Regiment, in Vietnam. In July of 1983, at the age of 52, he was promoted to the rank of general and succeeded General Robert Barrow as the Commandant of the Marine Corps. And so he was there. In fact, I don't know if you remember the story, but the story is a famous story from the time of one of the Marines. It was a Marine that was pulled out of the barracks, rubble. And I met this guy at the museum last year. Yeah, it was crazy. And so I was just walking in. I hadn't been to the museum for a while. And it was in October. And they had gone to the memorial service down in North Carolina. And they were all driving back up for a dinner that the president was hosting for them. And because they had never had anything like that for them. So there, I walked in, and as I was talking to the woman, I said, "What's new here that I should go see? I've been here in about a year." And so she said, "Well, this is new, this is new." And then this guy walked up, and I said, "Oh, go ahead." And they had had a previous conversation, and somehow Beirut came up. And I looked at him, I said, "You were in Beirut?" And his friend looked at me and said, "He's famous." And I said, "What are you famous for?" "He's the Marine that was laying in bed in Landstuhl when General Kelly came through. I believe it was Landstuhl." And they were telling him he couldn't see, right? He had his eyes patched. And they said, "Hey, the Commandant's here." And he thought that most of these guys were Air Force guys. They were in there with him, and he thought they were busting his balls, right? And so he motioned that he couldn't talk either. He motioned that he wanted to feel the Commandant's stars. So General Kelly bent down, and he grabbed his collar, and he felt the stars, right? And then he motioned with his right hand, "I want something to write with." And they gave him a piece of paper, a tablet, and he wrote Semper Fi on it. So if you've never heard that story, if you can find it on the internet. Quote from General Kelly: "When you see 144 caskets on an airplane, it will have an impact on you for the rest of your life." He also was the commandant during Oliver North's espionage scandal. Also commandant when Clayton Lone Tree was charged with espionage in Moscow. So, General P.X. Kelly. He retired in 1987 after 37 years of service. So fair winds and following seas to General Keller. Top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a break. Number one today is militiamen. It's interesting, right? Militiamen withdraw from U.S. embassy, but Iraq tensions linger. That's from the Associated Press, right? Now, there was big hullabaloo over the holiday because the New York Times said they were mourners, right? Which completely is a complete lie, right? It's about as much of a lie as, you know, the victory at sea thing is in the way it treats Halsey as the way it treats Admiral Halsey after, you know, after the Battle of Leyte Gulf, like that he didn't fall for a Japanese trick and almost get a bunch of people killed. He did get people killed. Number two, 750 soldiers from the 82nd Airborne are headed for CENTCOM, an additional 4,000 troops expected to deploy as Iran tensions mount. Number three, U.S. Navy declares new fleet created to confront Russia and that it's fully operational. Number four, Kim Jong-un warns hostile U.S. policy means there will never be a denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula. Oh, what a shocker. Number five, scammers have stolen $450 million from military families since, holy shit, man. Active duty service members and veterans are consistently a target for scam artists. Veterans and active duty members have lost $405 million to fraudulent schemes since 2012, according to a new report that analyzes data from the Federal Trade Commission and the Better Business Bureau. That's disgusting. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Tim Lynch, Jeff Kinney will join me. More of Almari Radio on this Thursday, coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.